There are so many good, like, deep, like, low-level researchers and CTF players that would be amazing bug hunters if they tried.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. So there are a lot of reasons why I love ThreatLocker. I talk about it from time to time. But one of the reasons that's really cool is that they don't talk down to their users in their marketing material, right? So let me give you an example. There's this new product they've released called ThreatLocker Web Control. It allows you to simplify your environment by taking web control, like website categorization and that sort of thing, and creating policies for those categorizations, and then sort of building that into the ThreatLocker ecosystem so you don't have to have a third party doing it. Great. Simplicity. We love it, right? But as I'm reading through this page and I'm listening to this little webinar snippet, I'm sharing my screen on YouTube, by the way. There's this one piece of marketing material that just makes me smile, right? It says, our web control does not rely on DNS to redirect users to another website, as that will often cause certificate errors. Instead, they'll be redirected to a company-managed page with their instructions on their options. And at the end, it mentions this ThreatLocker browser extension that enhances the user experience, making it super easy for them to request permission to block sites. So I just freaking love how they're like, yeah, you know, DNS, it's cool, but it causes certificate errors. So we're going to sort of work around that, right? They give you a technical explanation of the implementation, which is cool. And then also they care about the UX, right? That's why they built the browser extension to make it easy for their users to get to the right spot and know their options when a website that they need to access is getting blocked. And I'll try not to yap about it for too long, but in this webinar here, they also mention that there's like various types of categorization that is done and that they're using machine learning for that in you know, for their main type of categorization, but they also have a human go back and remove some of those false positives. And they've already removed over 6,000 false positives. And they've just launched this product a couple months ago. So clearly they're doing a great job here. Love the technical implementation. Love that they're simplifying the ecosystem. Way to go, ThreatLocker, as always. All right, let's go back to the show. That's it. Sup, hackers. We got a This Week in Bug Bounty real quick, and we got a couple announcements from a couple different places. We'll start with Yes We Hack's new program that went public, Louis Vuitton. Now, if you guys are following the live hacking event scene at all, there was a pretty sick live hacking event for Louis Vuitton that's happened in the past couple of years. And I was salty that I didn't make it to that one. I would have loved to have hacked on them because it's a cool brand, right? Louis Vuitton. It's nice to be able to say you've hacked Louis Vuitton. And now it's public on Yes We Hack. Bounties are, looks like $100 for a low, mediums up to 600, highs up to 1800, and criticals up to 4K, and that is in euros. So a little bit bump there from USD. Seems like they're a pretty good program. From what I've heard, they're good to work with. I wish we could get them to release like some hacker exclusive Louis Vuitton swag, but I know that they're really protective of their brand. So I don't know if I see that happening anytime soon, but that would be amazing. So Yes We Hack, I know you're listening. You got to make that happen. But if any of you guys are interested, that program is now public on Yes We Hack. The other one was something really, really scary that came out of a Yes We Hack bug bounty program. And that was CVE 2025-47934, which is a openpgp.js signature and encryption bypass here. Very scary. They essentially, this affects inline signatures and the signed and encrypted messages. And I'll just go ahead and read from this thing here. Detached signatures were not affected. But in order to spoof, the attacker needs to create a single valid message signature, inline or detached, as well as plain text data that was legitimately signed. And then they can construct an inline signed message or signed encrypted message with any data of the attacker's choice. Ooh, that one's bad. So yeah, I actually, when I saw the CVE come across my doc, I was like, uh-oh, I gotta go update some code that I've written. And I did, and we're fine. But this is an extremely impactful vulnerability and is gonna be used both on the client side and the server side because it affects openpgp.js. So you can see this in node apps or you can see this in client side apps as well. The GitHub announcement right here. Credits. Yes, we hacks OpenPGP.js bug bounty program. And I just wanted to shout out Eduardo at the Kudian Labs team for finding that, because that's pretty sick. So if you guys are assessing any like open source apps and you know for sure they're using OpenPGP, then this CVE would be a good one to try to get your hands on the POC for. They did list the, let me see where they are. Yeah, they did list the commits on GitHub that they used to fix it. So it should be pretty easy to reverse the actual vulnerability itself. All right, that's what I had for Yes We Hack. Moving over to Hacker One, we had a write-up on a program called Dust. And unfortunately, this wasn't a bug bounty. This was a VDP. But the title of it was Stored XSS in File Upload Leads to Privilege Escalation in Full Workspace Takeover. And just kind of reading through this, the report is really well written and really well done. But this is exactly what we've talked about, which is these, you know, just like Web3, AI also has Web2 problems, right? And this is just a traditional file upload content type issue, right? That affects this AI platform. And so when you're attacking AI, definitely, you know, make sure you're listening to all of Rezo's advice that he's talked about on the hacking series and also on his blog with the massive AI hacking write-up. But also don't forget your just basic Web2 vulnerabilities, right? Because they affect everything. All right, that's all I had on the This Week in Bug Bounty for this week. So let's get back to the show. Peace. I had some people over to my house yesterday because whenever you talk to your friends about being a hacker,
yes,
they're like, oh my gosh, I want to learn how to do that. So every couple months, I'll run these like, it's probably like every 2 or 3 months, I'll run these little like house hacker training things where I just kind of, I have a list of people that are like, yeah, I want to try that. Yeah, I want to try that.
Yeah.
And I just send them all a message right when I'm about to do this. And we just all gathered in my sunroom and I just cover a bunch of little basic things. And then we spend like an hour, hour and a half looking at HTTP requests and hacking targets. And dude, yesterday was like, was one of the best ones I've ever run because we found two bugs.
No, you did not. My goodness. That's insane. I would have never expected to actually pop a bug. I figured you would start with like, I don't know, DVMH or something like that.
Yeah.
Or DVWA. But anyways.
Yeah.
I think in general, this is like, really cool that you do that. It makes me want to do it. And I think that it probably saves people like weeks of time. There are so many simple questions you have at the beginning, like, well, what does this box do at the top? You know, like what exactly is the URL versus the host header? You know, like there's just so many like little small things that you don't understand as a beginner that take a lot of time to slowly to pick up on that people don't talk about that they can just ask you in person like that.
So here's the recipe for that, man. This is what I've been kind of doing with people is I'll bring them over. I'll say in advance, you gotta like your first challenge is to get Kaido or Burp set up on your computer, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And get the certificate thing sussed. Okay. Yep. And then, you know, when they arrive, they've got that done typically. So good work. And then I spend very little time talking about like most of the time what I would do before is go into like how HTTP works and stuff like that. But at this point, I just say, hey, look, you can inspect HTTP here. This is the way that everything communicates.
Yep.
We need to look at the path, just the path and the body.
Nice.
Don't worry about the headers right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just the path and the body of the requests, okay? And we're going to try to find, I give them a little lab on IDORs and I give them a little lab on client-side access controls, right?
Yep.
And then after we've done that, we pick a real app and we just start poking at it. And yeah, dude, it was crazy because yesterday the first attack vector that we tried, it actually worked. And
oh
I was like, yeah, guys, wait.
This is
not
deal, guys.
Yeah, this is not how this normally works. Like, and then later on, we found another one that was definitely a valid vuln. But I just fear I've ruined them a little bit.
Yeah, you like, did.
Yeah.
All like, the rest of us spent months finding like informationals and things.
Exactly.
It's like, I promise it's a version leak here. You shouldn't be telling your workers that there's a version leak here. You know, trying to justify little lame bugs. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's cool. And we normally try to split the bounty evenly across the group so that everybody gets like, you know, a little hit of the wow, it got paid sort of thing. So yeah, I do that for my friends that I know in real life. So please, like, I can't do it for everybody, guys. please don't ask. DM on that. But yeah, for the people that I've met in real life, it's a pretty fun time. And I think as more advanced hackers, right? Like, this is a really fun little thing you can do for your friends that are like, I want to be a hacker too.
Yeah, honestly, I think that people that feel the urge to DM you about this should actually host it, because they're going to learn so much by walking someone through it. It keeps you very focused, keeps you trying things. And then you're basically, like you said, you're showing people what they think is really cool. So,
yeah. Yeah, man, it was so hype. We were all like freaking out when we found a bug. It was awesome, man.
Yeah. And you've got that energy what's that called? Whenever contagious. Something is contagious. Yeah. You have a very contagious energy. So I'm sure.
What's that word? When it's contagious.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking some word like enthusiastic or something, but anyways, yeah. You want to jump to something technical?
Yeah. Let's jump to the technical content. You want to take one first or should I? Yours is really good. Talk to them about the Supabase thing.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I think in general, so this is 100% a shout out to S Shell, Justin Reinhardt. Yeah. I did not find this, but when he messaged me, I was like, oh, that's so genius. Because I've tried to test Supabase related apps. Oh, so anyone who doesn't know what Supabase is, basically it's like a managed Postgres that has a whole bunch of like default functionality, like RBAC control and all this. And nearly every AI app these days, like, you know, new startups, or if you use like Bolt.new or V0, a lot of them are using Supabase under the hood. And they'll even like sometimes have a button that's like enable Supabase, integrate Supabase. Like, so it's baked into so many of these new AI apps. Anyways, their API calls for pulling stuff back often use a format where it's like equals EQ dot and then like a UUID. And then that will fetch some object. So it might be a user object. It might be a conversation object. It might be whatever, you name it. Right. And I had tried putting in other UUIDs from other places in the app, like, you know, cross user testing and that sort of thing. And if they have row level access turned on, it doesn't work. And so, you know, I've found like where row level security is disabled, and I've reported that to some people. But one thing that I, for some reason, had never thought to try that Justin found, which is amazing, is just doing LT. So less than or GT, greater than, and then putting in a UUID that's like GT dot and then an all zero UUID or LT dot all 999s UUID, right?
That's so weird that it processes it like that, because it's like UUIDs aren't.
Yeah, they're not numeric in that way.
Yeah. Okay, anyways, so I'm going to share my screen really quick. I was trying to find something that has that syntax in it, and I was Googling around. And this is the only thing I could find that had it. But this is a GitHub discussion, and you can see it right here. This is what you're talking about, right?
Yep, like, that's exactly it. It's always like a select star too, for some reason.
That's a weird format, man. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. I agree.
And then here we go, right? This is the actual format right here, EQ dot. So he changed this to like less than, or zeroed out the whole UUID and then did greater than or something like that. And it processed the UUIDs as a numeric entity.
Yeah, it's always looked super juicy, because I mean, look at the end. It looks like you're just like injecting straight into a query. And they always look that way. I don't know if that's just by design. In general, it is usually sort of secure-ish. I've found plenty where it's not. But anyways, really interesting, and a very quick tip for people to go find some bugs in these new AI apps.
I would definitely have not have thought that you could do like a less than or greater than a UUID. So that's got to be a weird quirk to Supabase.
Yep.
Or maybe I'm off on that. You know, hit up the hashtag corrections channel on the Critical Thinking Discord if you've got more info on what I'm missing about that. But yeah, that's definitely a cool one. All right, let me I'll share this next one here. Guys, there are a couple people out there that whenever they tweet, you should just be paying attention, okay? And lately Jorian has become that for me. Like he really has. He's just been dropping stuff left and right that is really impactful. Slonzer has become that lately. You know, like there are a couple people that weren't really on my radar as much besides the past couple months, and they're just crushing it. Zero is another, that researcher, Z-H-E-R-O. But anyway, here's the latest post by Jorian that came up in my notifications, because I have notifications turned on for this guy. And it's a really interesting thing that he has here, which is there's a fun trick to detect when actions like shortcuts or clicks are happening in a cross-origin iframe, which is not something that you normally are able to do very well. Hmm. And something that I've needed in past exploits to detect when a click has occurred inside of an iframe. Hmm.
Because you need to update something, like you need to update what's drawn on the screen or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because if you're click jacking or something like that, right? Like it's sometimes helpful to understand whether they've clicked on in the button, you know, in that iframe,
yep.
so that you can maybe send a post message or do something, you know, to manipulate the page.
Yep.
Or if you need to harvest multiple clicks, then you can change your offset, right, on the page, to click on a different button this next time or something like that. And this trick that he has here is really interesting. It uses navigator.useractivation.isActive, and it checks it, you know, on an interval of 0 milliseconds. So it's just constantly checking it. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as a user activation is triggered, so on the top level page, apparently this can also detect clicks in the bottom level page. It consumes that user activation by doing a window.open, which consumes the user activation, and then instantly closes it. So it's boom, boom. And then now that page is not selected again. So the user, you know, if they want to click on something again, it will trigger that user activation call once again, and then you can repeat the process. So it's a way for you to constantly like harvest a change to the user activation state and then reset it, so that it you can detect it again. Very, very smart technique. Definitely going to be using that in some of my client-side exploits in the future.
I've noticed that this comes from Jorian quote tweeting a person named Atomic Byte, where they somehow do clipjacking, where like you can get owned by copying. That's like really unique. I need to go in and read this.
Yeah,
Jazzle.
Yeah, exactly. It is. That's another one lately. It's been crazy. So let me go to this article. I read through this, and here's the POC on this.
I think
this,
you
right?
corrected me on pronunciation. I think it's Jazzle.
Jasol? Okay. Yep. Well, so sorry, dude. We do our best. We're podcasters. Exactly. You know, like it's difficult. But look, check out this POC, dude. So he pastes it in here and he says, just hold down control ACV. And then he grabs all of this information from this domain, right? So you can embed a page and then there's like, you just press control A, control C, selects everything on the page. And then the attacker can, using this click detect or this event detection, can you know, then force focus onto a text area. And then when they press control V, it pastes that content into the text area.
Yep.
And so it's a very sneaky way to do like cross-site hijacking of information. And I've actually seen some research by Matan Baer that is also really, really cool on this that I'm going to have him come on and talk about at some point, where you can do something very similar. So yeah, I got to write that down because
people want more from the researchers. Come on, Justin.
Dude,
people want more
I know. And I they've been finding cool stuff. They haven't done the thing.
The publication.
And, like,
yeah.
Published it. So there's going to be more coming from that soon.
The phrase is what gets measured gets managed. So you need to like say we're going to release one thing per month or something.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, but it's difficult, right? And that kind of flows into our topic for later, where it's like talking about how to balance the opportunities that you get when you're a full-time bug bounty hunter, mm-hmm. and like the reason that you maybe became a full-time bug bounty hunter in the first place, which is to live a life of full flexibility.
Right.
That's right. So anyway, we'll get to that, but let's pound out the rest of this technical content first.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's go super technical first. And then that way throughout the episode, we slowly get less technical. But the thread I wanted to share was, and mostly it's just a user to follow, but let me share my screen. Mm-hmm. His name is Wyatt Walls, but he's kind of been around the prompt injection space a little bit. I don't know them other than, you know, following them on X. Share screen. Hopefully
is this, let's see.
Oh, we are going to leak my messages.
Left-hand draft.
Sorry for, left-hand draft. Sorry to the editors. Anyways, they basically did really well on the Gray Swan, like hacker prompt challenge or whatever. I think people probably saw me tweet about it or whatever. Gray Swan is a company that makes like models called Cygnet, and they're like pretty resilient to prompt injection. Anyways, they ran a challenge where you could earn money and stuff. And Wyatt is now allowed to tweet about it. And so he basically breaks down in this thread, which we'll share, all like a bunch of different prompt injection payloads where they're trying to get an email agent to do malicious actions. And that's really useful and beneficial because one, agents are going to keep cropping up. Two, as we'll talk about in just a second with Google I/O, Google is obviously cares deeply about this stuff and pays well. And their Gemini is now going to basically be able to access your emails from like all over the place.
Oh my
gosh. Look through your docs, look through your emails. Like, yeah, I've got a lot to say about Google I/O in just a second. But anyways, all that to say, this is a really good thread on prompt injection payloads and the ways that you could weaponize or get malicious actions out of like an email agent. So people should just look at this. I don't want to beat a dead horse about it. And I also know that we're constrained on time today, but you should follow, you should follow this person. And also if you're interested in AI security and also potentially, you know, use these payloads to test Google or other companies that have big bug bounty programs.
So speaking of like programs that have, you know, that you need to put a lot of payloads through and stuff like that, are you able to talk about the thing you showed me right before this podcast, or does that need to wait a little bit?
No, I think it's fine. I don't mind to share. I don't think that I'm doing anything there that, one, it's people to, one, if people can replicate it, that's great. If they can't, that's fine too. But anyways, I have basically been doing AI safety testing for a major model provider. Since it's a private program, I won't mention it, but I'm sure most people saw it. They tweeted about it. Actually, yeah, I can just say it since they tweeted about it. Anthropic basically has an AI safety challenge going on, and anyone who applies can do it. So you should go apply. It's really cool. But the way it works is they've got some malicious prompts that if you can get the model to respond to, then you get a bounty, and they then will submit your same payload with their hidden request that they want to see if it'll pass on the back end. And if it also passes those, you get an even bigger bounty. So that's really cool.
Wow.
But I wrote a system that is kind of similar to Haddix's system. I assume his is better. He's been cranking on it for longer, and it's similar to what this company that I'm an advisor for called Splix or SPLX made internally that they use for their stuff. Basically, when it comes to making a prompt injection payload, as you and I discussed on the Google episode, like there's always like a goal or, you know, you're trying to do something. So you have to have the model respond in a certain way. And then often you'll need to like bypass guardrails. And sometimes you do that through obfuscation things. And so I know whenever Haddix described his, he described it as like a tactic or like a goal and then like a technique, like, but through this form of injection or through this form of storytelling or whatever. And then the obfuscation at the end, which is like Base64 encoded or invisible unicoded tags or whatever. And that's cool. But I always thought like, man, that's still you selecting all three items and generating and then copying and pasting the payload, blah, blah, blah. I needed that to be way more automated. So when I built mine, I basically, it's like two step. The first step is it iterates over every attack tactic that I could come up with. I'm sure there are a lot more. I need to refine those prompts, but every attack tactic and then every obfuscation tactic that I could come up with. And then I put in a custom goal. And then when I hit run, it does every permutation of the tactic and the obfuscation payload. All of that goes to a prompt writer. And so I'm using Sonnet 3.7 for my prompt writer because Anthropic has in their console, if people don't know this, it's like pretty high value, high utility. Basically, if you're designing some sort of AI app, and you want to improve your prompt inside of Anthropic's console, like in the workbench, I think is what it's called, you can have it write a prompt for your app. And it's really good. And so I was like, so I'll probably have this thing write the prompts. So it takes my goal. It takes my tactic that I want to use to try to get the model to respond unsafely. And it takes my obfuscation payload and it gives that to the prompt writer, which is Sonnet 3.7. It outputs the prompt that then the malicious prompt that then tries to get this new model they're testing to respond in an unsafe fashion. So it's kind of like a
Inception,
two-stage thing.
Dude.
Yeah. Well, that's actually one thing that makes it really hard. So actually this is a really good pro tip for anybody who's out there developing apps that deal with prompt injection or jailbreaks. If you want to write code, like let's say you're using Cursor and a part of your app is a prompt or a jailbreak. Mm-hmm. One thing that gets confusing is the agent now is influenced by that. So it's really hard to write a code around that because it's like the model has to like hold this meta state in its mind and like not get confused by all these jailbreak payloads as it's trying to write code over here. And so the way that I have kind of fixed that or solved that, so this is the pro tip for everybody, is basically template all those out into a file that you don't give access to the model and then just you like let it have those variable names or those enums or whatever.
Oh, interesting.
And so it can use those enums in the process of writing its code, but it can't see those payloads. And then you can edit those payloads or just include that when you're executing the app at runtime, but don't include that in the context because all of those payloads will confuse it. I actually do that a lot with Shift, like when we're working on Shift and stuff, because those payloads can confuse it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of, that is a lot for it to keep straight, I'm sure. But it's interesting that you're using AI to build a prompt to hack AI. I feel like it would deny. I feel like you might run into denials on the prompt.
You're exactly right. So I was worried about that. And for some reason, Sonnet 3.7 is fine with it. Yeah. I do agree with you. I thought I would have to like convert to Grok or something that's like, you know, less safe. That's like, doesn't refuse at all.
Yeah.
But I haven't had to yet. So
Yeah, that's funny. Grok just doesn't refuse anything.
Grok has no refusals. Yeah, you can, you can convince Grok to do whatever you want.
That's hilarious.
And he's really
man.
Smart, so it's good for hacking.
Nice. All right, next on the list, I just wanted to give a shout out to the Wiz team. I just went on their podcast and did an episode with them. Lots of fun. So check out their the podcast, Crying Out Cloud.
How is that episode performing? Have they told you any stats or metrics?
I haven't checked it out, actually. Cool. I'll have to go see, but definitely, you know, go check it out, guys, if you want more content. I you know, you've been saying for a while, Joseph, that we should do like an interview of me, because most of the time I'm on here interviewing people and stuff like that. And so Crying Out Cloud is kind of a version of that. And
okay, cool.
They spend a lot of time. They actually really did their research on me. Oh, they're like, so you play volleyball, right? So you do jiu-jitsu, right? And I'm
so
like,
when you were 6.5 years old and you fell off the stoop and you
exactly.
hit your head, how was that?
Geez, they got some like serious recon going on over That's there. Funny. Like
That makes interviews great though. I'm a huge fan of podcasts. And one of my favorites is Conversations with Tyler. Tyler Cowen is just a polymath about everything and interviews experts on everything, and he reads anything they've ever written, even if it's like multiple books, and digs deep, and those always make for some of the best questions.
And so it was a great interview, so we'll link it in the description, but I just wanted to also shout out them because their research team won Pwn to Own, which is a huge accomplishment. And that's something that we've kind of been, I've been trying a little bit to get people from Pwn to Own on the podcast. We had Cincinology on and Sharon Brizanov that did some Pwn to Own stuff. So I definitely want to get more people from the Pwn to Own space onto the podcast and talk to them. So I'm going to send out some feelers to some of the people that performed well at this Pwn to Own and see if we can get more people on, because I think it is a really different world than the normal, you know, web bug bounty world. And I think I would like to try to cross that gap a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that'd be
there
that
are so
value.
Many good like deep like low level researchers and CTF players that would be amazing bug hunters if they tried.
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%.
Speaking of, a little mini shout out, Jacoby. You know, a lot of people might know him from some of his like Microsoft research and stuff. He has been like leaning into bug bounty and tweeting a lot about it, and I just love it so much because like I think he's a, you know, a researcher and like a technical person who's like knows a lot about Microsoft products and has never really done bug bounty, and like within a week was already finding bugs on Microsoft. And so
what's his handle?
I think it's I am Jacoby.
I am Jacoby.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh okay. Yeah. For some reason, I've never heard anybody say that name out loud.
Did you say Jacoby or something?
Jacoby. That's what I was thinking it was. And then when you said Jacoby, I was like, the frick is that?
I'm saying it wrong. I don't know. But.
So, definitely like to see people pivoting into that space a little bit. All right. And then this was the other one that we wanted to talk about was, once again, our boy Gareth Hayes, Portswigger Research, pointed something out that was really cool that actually originally came from Simon Pieters. And this is that there's actually a new XSS vector with the image tag. And it no longer requires the source property
image tag
to trigger on
so,
error.
Insert so hot these days, image related things, right?
Yes, it is, dude.
Speaking
Seriously.
Of, to close the loop on that, they patched your leak.
Ah, shoot. They did patch it, man. Freaking Jun Kokatsu, man. I swear this guy, I should not have tagged him. But you know, they actually turned it around much faster than I expected. I was expecting a year plus, you know, deprecation time on that. But I guess they just said, this has got to be closed up now. And it makes sense because that's like the refer policy being able to be bypassed is pretty bad.
Yep. So, yeah. One click ATOs. I saw somebody like Max or whatever got paid twice. So.
Yeah. I think over the course of over what I've seen in the critical thinking community, I saw 15 plus ATOs get paid out with that bug. It was crazy.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, back to this. This is not related to refer policy or leaks or anything like that.
I thought it was interesting and funny that they're both image related. So yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us how this works.
So Gareth, you know, tweeted out just a tweet that says image source set equals one, on error equals alert one. And this is interesting because typically the source parameter was required for image-based exploits in the past. The on error and the on load won't work unless you have a source attribute. But now you can actually get it to trigger with source set. So if there's something looking for source equals or something like that, or you're having some problem there, you can use source set equals one. And that will also trigger the on error for an image tag. And then the guy that he was quote tweeting on this, Simon, said, actually you can trigger it without even having any other attributes. So just image on error equals alert one. If you wrap it in a source tag that has source set equal to one.
Oh, interesting.
Which I was really confused about, but I tried it in my browser and it worked. So it's just those little niche things you want to know about when you're in these exploitation scenarios where, you know, right. Maybe you're going up for some weird WAF or something that really does not like the source attribute on an image or something. The source set could get you past it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Pretty solid.
Let's use the next 3 minutes to cover any other news, and then we'll save the last 15 for our kind of discussion.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good, man.
I wanted to. Are you more interested in hearing about Google I/O since you didn't tune in?
Yeah.
Or the coding agent stuff? I'll wrap it all in one quick thing.
Do it. Wrap it, because I'd like to hear about those. Yeah.
Yeah. So crazy. In the last like 3 or 4 days, we'll just call it the last week, but I think it's really been the last 3 or 4 days. We've seen Codex be released from OpenAI, which is like basically their hacking or their coding agent. So you can even apparently like use it from your phone. The majority of these coding agents, I think, are in like the $200 a month price tier, but they're really good. Like I've seen a lot of people who are very technical talk about how impressed they are with it. But anyways, you can basically just like, you just connect up your GitHub and you choose like a branch and you just like give it a prompt and it goes and it'll do a PR and then submit the PR. And it happens through your auth. So it kind of looks like you did it too, which is interesting. But you can basically go in and then review the PR and just approve it or deny it. And so you can just spin up 100 of these, right? As long as you have the time to review the PRs, just spin them up for whatever features you want to add to your app and then just like approve, deny it, and kind of have like automated.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I don't know. I mean, Cursor, like even with Cursor currently, like it does implement features pretty well.
Right.
But it definitely needs to be tweaked when things are more complex. And I think the real crazy thing that's going to happen with these things is when it can actually validate that it wrote the code correctly.
Yep.
So you can give it a scenario where it's like, all right, come to this web page, click this button, enter this text, and this object should be added to the page.
Yep. And there's no doubt that that's possible now with through things like Selenium and browser use and MCP servers. Like, there's no doubt that that's possible. But yeah, I haven't seen it like done really well yet.
Yeah, it needs to be able to validate that it wrote the code correctly.
Yep.
You know, like, and then if it can, then it's like, oh, this is sick. Like, could you imagine just like essentially just writing in plain English test cases, or essentially writing software would then get reduced to like user requirements,
right?
As you know, if anybody's ever done like the user stories or whatever, it's like, as a user, I want to do, you know, XYZ, and then you just write those and you give it to the AI, and the AI will like write the code, check that it did the thing correctly,
right?
And then, dude.
No, I think it's coming. Yeah, so multiple companies release stuff like that. Google's is called Jules, jules.google, and J-U-L-E-S. And it was a part of their Google I/O release, which released a ton of crazy stuff. They have glasses, finally, you know, like Google Glass started it. This is kind of closing the loop on it, that are fully multimodal, where it can see the world. You can talk about your world. You can be like, where did I leave my coffee cup or whatever? And it overlays it on the glasses. And they like are pretty small form factor. Like, they looked pretty normal to me on stage.
I did see that. And I think they're doing it more correctly this time.
Yeah.
Where like it actually is powered by your phone, and the thing on your glasses is just
screen,
batteries and
microphone
and input, right? Yep. And then everything gets powered from the phone in your pocket. I think that makes way more sense.
Yeah, yeah. This still, like, I finally got my Meta AI Ray-Bans hooked up to my new phone. For some reason, I wasn't using them for months because I tried to switch it and it didn't work. And I eventually did it. And it's such a game changer. It's so nice. But anyways, they also released the craziest video generation I've ever seen. Have you seen any of these videos?
What is that? VO3 or something like that?
VO3.
Is that?
Yeah, have you seen it with audio?
No, but I freaking saw it in the code when we were hacking in Tokyo before it got released.
Did you?
I was like,
really?
VO3, that's kind of crazy. What is that? And then I couldn't get it to like work.
It is insane. Like, you need to, as soon as we hang up the call, go look at it. Like, it can basically do a full video for you of whatever you want and include audio. And when people are speaking, like, their mouth moves perfectly with the, it's insane. Like, somebody generated like a guy rapping about VO3 and it like just looks perfect. Like, you could convince me it's real. So,
dude, it's crazy. We're doing the podcast right now with VO3.
Yeah. Yeah. This is actually
No. I'm just kidding.
I have seen a lot of people. It's so good though. I've seen a lot of people tweeting videos and saying like, can't believe this is AI generated. And I don't think it is. I think they're just like posting like Rick, like they're like the Rick Astley Rickroll, but I legitimately can't tell because it's overfit. You know how some of the image models would like output like Disney characters that look exactly like Disney characters?
Yeah.
And you,
yeah.
You could be convinced it was a screenshot from one of the movies. That's how overfit VO3 is. So if you have it make like copyright video of like, you know, Rick Astley, it looks exactly like it. So you can't actually tell if it's AI generator or it's like actually scraping from the video. So yeah, we're entering that weird uncanny valley.
Yeah, that gets a little bit whack for sure. We will be on this pod doing things live. I was telling Richard that it would be really cool if I fumbled over my words during a ad read, or like if I needed to bleep something out, instead of bleeping it, you know, it just seamlessly deleted it. You know, I was thinking that'd be pretty cool for AI.
Yeah. Very soon. I think it's 100% possible with video editing and all that. So anyways, we went a little over time, but anyways, my whole point was, and I posted this in the Critical Thinkers chat, was like, Google releases 10 products, go forth and hack. Right. I think it's like really cool that stuff like that can happen and companies are releasing stuff so fast.
They are cranking stuff out. So there's bugs there for sure. 100%. Yep. All right. So I guess you and I were kind of talking about what we wanted to do with this episode beforehand. And I kind of wanted to end this with a little bit of a chat about full-time bug bounty, because, you know, you've been doing full-time bug bounty for how long now?
It'll be 5 months.
5 months?
Actually,
yeah.
February, March, April, May. Yeah. For 4 months.
4 months. Yeah. So, and I know that you and I have both had this experience where it's like we become full-time bug bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. For the purpose of living our life with flexibility, mm-hmm. right? And you know, to be honest, the money part of full-time bug bounty is great too. And I think it would be possible for me to get a job outside of bug bounty that pays more than I make in bug bounty.
For sure,
but it would be a little bit of a struggle. And the major game changer with bug bounty is that you have complete flexibility. But that complete flexibility can kind of, I don't know, it affects your full-time bug bounty vibe, right? I feel like I'm not doing that much bug bounty even though I'm full-time bug bounty.
I definitely feel that way. You know who does a good job of it? Douglas. Like he's full-time and he'll very frequently be like, yep, I'm on my 5-day streak, 5 bugs, 5 days in a row or whatever.
Dang, dude.
So maybe it's worth asking him. But yeah, so I guess your question is kind of like, how has that been for me?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Thanks.
Yeah. No, you're fine. Yeah, I thought that you were building there. Yeah, so I think that, like you said, let's just start at the beginning. I was a full-time employee. I like loved bug bounty so much. I actually, there's a misconception to kind of clear up here. I was like considering going full-time bug bounty when I was a full-time employee, but there were some people who were like, what if it takes the joy away from it for you? Like you like it so much. What if when you're doing it full-time, you don't enjoy it as much?
Yeah.
I think that that's just the human brain playing tricks on people. I think that's like saying, hey, what if you make too much money? What if you got too buff? You know, like there are people who, dude, this is a really common, do you know about this stereotype? There are a lot of people who are like, I don't want to lift weights because I don't want to get too big. It's like, well, guess what? You won't do that. And if you do, you just not work out for a few months and you'll be small again. It's like, it's not like no one is going to accidentally get too big. No one's going to accidentally make too much money. And I think that's the same way here. It's like, if you really love something, I think doing slightly more of it, especially where you have a fallback plan where anyone who's a top bug hunter can go get a job pretty easily. Like we all have these like big safety nets. Those of us who like have found plenty of bugs. So I say all that to say like, when I left, I was doing it to do more bug bounty. And you're right. It has been kind of paradoxical in the sense that I like am doing more, but it's not a lot more. So I think the real win is, and I know you asked me about this before we started rolling, that what it does unlock is all of the other things that were like maybe bouncing around in your head or other things that you wanted to do. So I have a lot of ideas every day. Like they just pop into my head, whether it's business ideas or whether it's research ideas. And I was never able to pursue them. I don't know if that's true for you or like how that's been for you. If I had to guess, critical thinking kind of was that for you and maybe the things you've done with critical thinking.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah, 100%.
And so I think if you are going to go full-time bug bounty, and like to become a full-time bug bounty hunter. And, you know, you're just like, you know, looking for reasons to do it. You know, we're obviously big fans of it. I think that that's a big thing you could potentially unlock is instead of it being your one hobby or your big hobby outside of work. Now, when it becomes the main thing, you have this freedom to do other stuff that you love, which for me has been like doing advisorships, doing critical thinking, doing just independent research or like AI stuff. What has it been for you, Justin? What is your life outside of full-time look like? Like, well, you said you're not doing that much. What's it filled with?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think here's the other thing about this is like, we make this decision to get the freedom, right? And then I think a piece of longevity for being a full-time bounty hunter is living in that freedom, right? And I think, you know, J-Rock posted in the accountability, you know, for the Full-Time Hunters Guild and the accountability channel. He was saying, you know, hey, I crushed it for the first like however many months of this year. And I've just been chilling for the past 4 weeks, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, hell yeah, dude, that's what you got to do, you know? Yeah. And I saw him when I was at NorthSec in Canada, and I hung out with him for a bit. Super nice place, by the way. He's got a great house. And thank you for being a great host, J-Rock. I know you listen to these episodes. But he was saying, you know, and I think it was very wise, that is a very key part of longevity and bug bounty as well, right? Is like, you can burn out really easily. Mm-hmm. So live in that freedom that you optimized for. And it doesn't necessarily mean you are going to be spending, you know, your 8 hours a day even hacking, where you might want to be able to do other things like go play tennis at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, you know, like, and that's just a part of living that lifestyle.
Dude, speaking of living in it and just sitting in it.
Yeah.
I think this was mentioned on the Chris Williamson podcast, like the most recent one he released, if anybody wants to go look at that. But it's also something that's been on my mind, and it's something you mentioned. So I feel like this is like, sometimes I call this, obviously I'm a Christian. I sometimes call this like God connecting the dots, but you know, maybe it's just a theme for some people. Right. But I think there's a theme here that everyone needs to grasp onto, which is just being grateful and like sitting in your wins. So Chris Williamson was saying that like for motivated people, they don't sit in their wins, right? It's like they set some goal, they get it, and it's like the next day they're working on the next thing. I think when you mentioned this earlier, you mentioned it in the context of Kaido, like just being an advisor for Kaido, like you've just been really enjoying it and you've been just thinking about that. I don't think we think about the joy that our hobbies or our interests bring us very often. And like, I want to do that a lot more. Like,
we need to do that, man.
Yeah. I think anyone who's a critical thinker or in the guild, like they are at the top of the coolest industry with the coolest skill set that humans have ever had. Like, I think the hacking is just like, at least for us, for our type of people, for people with our brain, like it really is extremely cool. And it's so easy to lose sight of the fact that we get to do something that we find so fun and awesome. And so, I think if you're listening to this and you do bug bounty, even if you're not making a killing and you're just like making a little bit of side hustle money, or you're struggling to find a bug, like just remember like what it was like when you wanted to be a hacker, when you wanted to know how to hack, you know. I think that I want to
take some time and chill in that, sit in that, and appreciate that, right?
Yeah. And I'm not saying like let your foot off the gas, but like when you're walking to the bathroom, when you're in the car driving, when you're about to go to sleep at night, like just be like, man, I've got it so good. Like this is really cool. I'm so thankful I get to do this.
Yeah, totally, man. I think that's a great reminder. And I think it's interesting because there is a little bit of a juxtaposition on that, right? It's like, I think that probably if you want to be, you know, and you actually had a really interesting tweet about this the other day. If you really want to be like the top, you know, then, you know, maybe you need to keep pushing. And a lot of people do, especially if they really love it. But I also think it's nice to like, especially if you get maybe top 10% or whatever, sure, right? To just like enjoy that and sit in it and, you know, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Relish that experience.
Yeah. 1000%. I mean, I think that like a lot of people who have succeeded because of their relentless grind. Mm. But I think that having that reminder, Naval or someone else, there's a lot of, you know, big people, productivity people who mention this, like what we're doing is both a means to an end, and it's sometimes the end itself. Like hacking, like having fun hacking is the end for me in some ways. Like it's why I like my job, because I love it. Like, and I think like, If the means to the end is hacking, then when you're making enough money to sustain the lifestyle that you and your family want, like you have kind of reached that point that you are working towards. Don't constantly let your monkey brain make you discontent because you kept moving the goalpost. Like it's okay to move the goalpost and to get excited about it, but don't let yourself be unhappy because of that. Naval does have a really famous quote, if you all haven't heard it, but it's like the promise you... I'm gonna forget it. Do you know the one I'm talking about? It's like,
no.
Oh yeah. Wanting is the promise you make to yourself to be discontent until you get what you want. It's like, you're basically saying, you know, by wanting something like, oh, I'm going to be discontent until I have this thing, or slightly discontent until I have this thing, right? And so it's like, make sure that you don't keep wanting more.
Desire is a contract you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want.
Yeah. And so I think like, yeah, I mean, you know, I believe that, you know, there's a deeper level of satisfaction that comes from objective truth and other things. But I think in general, a lot of people do, they haven't really thought about what they want. And so they're just always going for more when really they may have already arrived at where they wanted to get. And so
I certainly fall into that trap from time to time. So, all right, man, I think that's a wrap on this episode. Yeah. Let's end it with that.
Yeah. I love it. Peace. All right. Hope you all enjoy
Peace,
it.
Y'all. See ya. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.